About a week ago, had I guess it was last Sunday, had lunch with a younger couple, and the lady wasn't familiar with the draft. So I'm not quite sure how that came up in the discussion, but I said that they are looking at bringing back, not bringing back the draft, but if they were to do that, then women would go ahead and be involved as far as the call-up. And the young lady kind of, eyes got big and said, well, how does that work? And what age would that max out at? I said, well, I have to go back and look, and it looks like that's 28. But that kind of shook her up a little bit. That's one of the things that we see from our world as far as a lot of the attention that's being focused on, quote-unquote, equality. When you look at the Bible, Scripture does have a lot of things to say about equality, but you also have a lot of information as far as differences between men and women. We think about God, the creation, back there in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, we find that people, male and female, they are both made in the image of God. But when you look at male and female, when it says male and female, on the face of it, what does that sound like?
Two sexes.
All right, it sounds like there's some differences, right? I mean, you could have said male and male, female, but once you say male and female, it sounds like something is going on there. But from that standpoint, as far as just the passage, it is clear that you do have two sexes, two genders. The world doesn't like that very often, and both have been made in the image of God. When we think about the Godhead, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, that may not be the best way to illustrate it, but we do find that we have three. This happened to come up with one of our young people not too long ago, trying to ask some information about Christ, how he came into being, I guess, if you will. We've got Father, Son, Holy Spirit, but even though we've got three members of the Godhead, they do have different roles. They do have different functions. And that's what we see when we start looking at men and women. You may remember, I think you're familiar with 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 11 through 15, where Paul says, I permit not a woman to have authority over a man. And that, of course, is in the context of public teaching, those kinds of things. We've got male leadership, as Paul talks about in the book of Ephesians, Ephesians chapter 5, verses 22 through 24. And that information is based on creation. When Paul talks about these things, 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 13, he goes back to creation. This was how God set things up. So we've got a lot of ways that men and women are equal in the sense that they are identical. We want to look at some of those. Again, I gave you Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. Both have been made in the image of God. We think, for example, about Proverbs 31 as well. Maybe that's a part of the Bible that women have spent some more time in than men. But when you think about that lady in Proverbs 31, do you find a lady who is intelligent?
Yes.
Do you find a lady who is industrious?
Yes.
Do you find a woman who is creative? I mean, all the things that we might associate with men, you can look through that chapter and say, well, hey, women have those same qualities. Now, maybe they're not going to be absolutely equal in the terms of physical strength, but you start going through that chapter, and, she can provide for her own, she can get a job, work in the home, work outside of the home. All those things are there. And that is maybe not the first and foremost thing that comes to mind when we start thinking about Proverbs 31, but it certainly is reflected there. Let's get some other passages here. Matthew chapter 15, verse 28, Matthew 19, 4 and 5, and then we'll go down to Acts chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. Let's head somebody over to Matthew 15 and take a look at verse 28. Somebody want to be your helper there? Matthew 15, verse 28. All right, Lois. And then after that, we'll take a look a couple chapters later, about four chapters later, Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 and 5. Who wants? All right, Mom, thank you. And then we'll move over to the book of Acts, Acts chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. Who will be our Acts 2, 17 and 18 reader? Betty, to you. Thank you. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 15 and verse 28.
Then Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, your faith is great. Be it done for you as you wish. And her daughter was healed at once.
All right, we think maybe about men. They are the spiritual leaders, so because of that, you would hope that they would have great faith. But then you start looking at ladies, the other sex that God has created, and you would say, well, what about women? Can they have great faith? Well, what do you learn from Matthew chapter 15 and verse 28? There have been some congregations that have actually started from women. There have been some ladies who decided that they were going to get together, study the Bible, become Christians, and maybe their husbands came along at a little later time, maybe a much later time, but women also have the ability to excel in faith. And in some respects, I have been of the mind, and maybe I'm wrong, but I've been of the mind for a long time that there are some women who cannot preach some men. I've listened to some of those female preachers, and I mean, there are some of them who are really, really good. When you think about public speaking, if you take it out of the religious realm for just a second, do we have some female leaders as far as senators, congresspeople, mayors?
Sure.
Anybody ever hear some of them on TV and think, wow, you are pretty effective? I mean, so gender is not going to necessarily help you as far as the effectiveness of speech. So when we talk about abilities, thinking about this in terms of preaching, they may be able to preach just as well as a man, maybe even a lot better than most men. But that's not the question. But they can, at least at this stage, they can excel in faith. Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 and 5.
And he answered and said unto them, have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh?
All right, so if you've got this man and you've got this woman coming together in the bonds of marriage, and they become one flesh, what would that suggest to you as far as the range of human experience? You know, you're in that relationship. Is it just going to be the man who experiences stuff, or is it going to the woman? She's also going to be part of that relationship, and she's going to be able to have the full range of human experience as well. And part of that's going to be reflected from what we see in Acts chapter 2, verses 17, as far as usefulness in God's kingdom. Let's take a look at that. Betty, I think it's... Okay, we've certainly got the men here, but what about the women? Did God say that they were also going to not just be involved with Christianity, but they were also going to be able to participate as far as some of the spiritual gifts? Yes. And that's exactly what we see when we get a little further into Acts chapter 21. We've got Philip, his daughters, his four virgin daughters, they are involved with miraculous activity. So that's really, really important. Betty, if you're still in Acts, will you move forward just three chapters to Acts chapter 5 and verse 14? 5:14,
And believers were increasingly added to the Lord, both multitudes of men and women.
Okay. I think that, for me, when we think about women and the Bible, especially as it relates to Christianity, they are equal in terms of salvation. It wasn't that they were going to be a second class, a second tier Christian. God says the door is open to you. Not everybody's going to have the same job, the same responsibility, or the same role, but all people are going to have equal access to salvation. Now, you find as you start thinking through some passages, we'll throw this one in, but not actually look at it. You remember over there in Acts chapter 16 and verse 14, you've got Lydia. She becomes a Christian. Is she working outside the house? She is. She is the seller of purple, and we've got some other people that have done the same kind of thing. So we've got women working in the secular realm. They can work in the spiritual realm. They are equal in terms of needing salvation. We remember, I think, Romans chapter 3 and verse 23. There are how many righteous? None. Whether it's a man, whether it's a woman, all people need salvation. And we think about some other passages as well. Romans chapter 16. Do you remember that lady by the name of Phoebe? She was a servant of the church. Some people say that she was a deaconess. I don't think that the evidence is there for that. But she had, you know, a willingness to sacrifice and so forth. Those kinds of things. Galatians 3:28. Again, all are equal as far as their spiritual blessings in Christ. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Is it just the dad that needs to be respected in the home by the kids? No. Children need to respect both parents. You have the same kind of thing in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 16. There is a responsibility to honor the parents, whether that be a male or whether that be a female parent. And then, of course, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, all are equal partners when it comes to the inheritance. It's often been said sometimes in marriage ceremonies that the woman was not made from man's foot, and it was not made from man's, she was not made from man's head, came from the side to indicate what we've been talking about. That is, there was going to be equality. She was going to be equal in all these areas, but the man, as far as the spiritual side of life, he was going to have that spiritual headship. You find, I think that reflected in some other places as well. When we think about elders, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, what's one of the qualifications for elders?
To be married.
All right.
One
that
wife.
Is true.
One wife.
All right. And if you have one wife, unless it's a really nutty world, what's going to be true? You're going to be a man. You're going to be a male. So God, when he talks about elders, he reflects the same kind of teachings and principles that we've been talking about as well. You find that deacons, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12, also married men who have children. So the principles that we find, we've got males, they have a head, that is Jesus. Females also have a head, that is a male. Now that is offensive to a lot of people in our society right now. And it just seems like as the word goes further and further, more and more time passes, at least in our country, this is something where a lot of people get upset. When they hear it, they claim that Christians are bigoted. They claim that the Bible is just all kinds of terrible things. But we do have this taught, and that's the way it needs to go. Now, having said...
Brad, I had a question.
Sure.
About elders, a bishop. In the Bible, it says they need to be married. How did that change with Catholics? Because, you know, their bishop or they're supposed to be single. I wonder how did they justify that?
Well, that's a really good question. When you start looking at church history, you do find that we go from a New Testament pattern of a plurality to finally you start getting, I'm going to say, probably around 300 AD, so it takes a little while, but they go to a single bishop or a single elder, and he's over... kind of like you would find the diocese concept. You know, we're going to be over five or six groups. My thinking is, and they might have a different explanation for it, but once you start going down that road where you move beyond God's plan for leadership outside the local congregation, and you're now saying we're going to make one man versus a plurality who has a responsibility over several congregations versus one, once you have become involved with that much error, it doesn't seem to me to be a big jump, Julie, to add in some other things. And one of those would be, it doesn't have to be married. Anybody else? Okay, let's pick up some other things here. I want to talk about a little bit as far as men. Sometimes people can say, well, you know, we believe that. But it's one thing to say we believe that, and it's another thing to practice it, isn't it? You think there's some cases, places where you have men, they are nothing more than a figurehead when it comes to that in the spiritual realm? Let's take it out of the spiritual realm for just a second. Let's think about the home. You think if God's will is for men to be the spiritual leaders in the home, and I think we've done a reasonably good job of affirming that from Ephesians chapter 5, 1 Timothy chapter 2, do you think that there are some cases, do you know of some cases where that is not the case? That it is the woman who is the one who runs the house.
Runs the house or just the spiritual head?
Or what? Well, I was using those two synonymously, but if you want to make a distinction, you can.
Oh, well, running the house could be, you know...
I wasn't thinking about, you know, keeping the kids in day-to-day activities, you know, watching over the checkbook. I'm thinking she is the one who makes the decisions. She is the one who is leading that family. Well, let's think about that for a little bit, because is that necessarily always bad? Could that sometimes be required? Bonnie?
What if the man of the house has a job where he has to travel? She has to be in charge while he's gone, right?
Well, let's kick that around for a minute. We can be a little more specific with that. Think about the military.
Yes.
If you are deployed, and that has been true for military people for a long, long time, you are... And it wasn't like now where you've got Zoom and instant communication. I mean, you send a letter back in the day, and it might take at least a few weeks to get home, and your phone calls probably were not that common and certainly expensive in the past. So if you are deployed for a year or 18 months or maybe 2 years, then how does that work?
You can have a plan. The husband and wife have a plan. And they work together on that plan. So if he's out of the house, she's still directing the plan.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I would think that that would be a reasonable approach. Again, now that is probably not quite as critical as it was in the past, but you do have to have some plan.
What do you mean it's not as critical?
Well, you've got Zoom and other things that are instant communication now, where if you go back 20 years, you'd have to send a letter and wait 3 weeks. So... this, I mean, you can have daily conversations with people by email and phone calls, where you couldn't have that in the past. So that was what I meant, intended to say by that. Then you have some other situations too. You would try to do some planning there. But what about as far as a medical problem? You know, your spouse is in an accident and is unconscious, you know, for 6 months. Obviously, he can't run the household, can he? So there are going to be times where women do need to step up and assume a responsibility for a limited period of time. Now, that gets a little complicated, and military families have seen this to a large degree. The husband goes away. The wife becomes accustomed to kind of ramrodding the household. The husband comes back, and then all of a sudden, there's sort of a clash there, because it's kind of like, well, I was so accustomed to, you know, making all the decisions on my own. Now, again, it's not quite as bad now because of the technology that we have, but in the past, that's been a real hardship, and it still is an issue. Don?
Maxine and I together most of the time, that she can't make a decision until I approve it?
No.
Okay, what do you think? Good.
No. I always am grateful when those questions are asked versus people go away thinking, I wonder if he meant that. So always, let's go ahead and get that out in the open. So we'll go down this road a little further. There are several things here that will tie into what we're discussing, but let's stick back here with just a second. We're all on the same page as far as there may be times where a woman needs to take charge of the household because, you know, the husband is incapacitated or the husband is not available for some reasons. So if we have those as far as sort of the exception times, then when we have the normal times, how should that work in a home? Where God says, you as the man, you are the leader in that house. And then we'll get to the church here in a little bit. How should that work? What should a home, a Christian home, be like? Well, I'll add in a little bit more as you try to think through that. What if we have a Christian home, but the man is not a Christian? And maybe not so interested in Christianity, but the wife is a Christian, committed Christian, and they have kids there. So how does that work? Sure. I think that is a great point. That's a good beginning point. Would it be appropriate for that woman, the wife, who's a Christian, to say to the husband, you know, we don't know exactly in the illustration if she became a Christian after the marriage or before the marriage, but if she were somewhat knowledgeable about the faith, to acknowledge to her husband, look, you know, the Bible teaches, you know, whether you believe it or not, that there are some things that are true concerning the marital relationship. And this is one of those things, that you are to be the head of the house. I believe that. I want to follow that. And to have a frank discussion with the husband and say, do you want to lead the household? Now, hopefully he will. I think most men would be inclined to do that in at least a semi-right way if they are not religiously inclined. But, you know, to have the wife support that. But what happens if we have a situation where the husband says, look, okay, that's fine, but this religious stuff, I don't want any part of it. Does that happen?
Yes.
All right, so how does...
Then you do the best you can.
All right, and that's going to be a struggle. You know, the kids are going to give you some grief, well, dad doesn't come to services and all those things. But there are going to be some times where that does not mean that you're interfering with that spiritual leadership. It means that you have a less than desirable set of circumstances. It's a little akin to an orphan. You know, God's plan is for, you know, husband, wife, that we looked at from Matthew chapter 19, to come together and to have kids. All right, well, that would be great. If you look at some of the recent statistics, the number of two-parent households, and Julie sees this as much as anybody, I mean, we're in the tank. I mean, you've got to go back several years, more than 50 years, half a century, to see kind of where we were. And it's just not pretty right now. But there are times where that relationship gets disrupted. Maybe it's because of death. Maybe it is because of abandonment. And you have a less than ideal set of circumstances. And you have to work with that the best that you can. And sometimes kids turn out to be orphans. And sometimes you have this kind of thing happen when it comes to the marital relationship. Marcia, to you.
Our son-in-law has been a Christian and has fallen away. Our daughter considers herself a church widow. You know, she's on her own when it comes to the spiritual stuff. But there are a lot of men there who have stepped up that she can go to.
Well, that's an interesting, I've never heard anybody describe themselves as a church widow, but that is an interesting and I think an apt description. That would be another facet to that. When you find those kinds of things, and hopefully there would be some men in the congregation that would step forward. Hopefully the elders will be helpful in that regard if a congregation has elders to say, look, your circumstances are not ideal, kind of like the, you know, orphan, and we will do the best that we can. Anybody else? Betty?
I also find situations in homes where men, they can say they're Christians, that look at the Bible, and we may not, we do see that some here, it's really bad in third world countries, where the man says, you do everything I say, you don't do anything without I say it, and you don't go anywhere without me, you don't do anything other than what I tell you. We've got that kind of situation too, that Christian women have to deal with.
That is true. I was taking a look in view of that comment at 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 17. Finally, ye husbands, in like manner dwell with your wives according to knowledge, giving honor unto the woman, as unto the weaker vessel, as also being joint heirs of the grace of life. And then it says, to the end that your prayers be not hindered. So it might be that a guy takes, let's use the word authority, over his wife in a very bad way, a mean, condescending way. This will tie in a little bit to what Donna was saying earlier. God says, I take note of that. You know, we, that's deity, put together this relationship, but God says if you're not willing to function properly in that relationship, you're going to get whacked, so to speak. And anybody who, you know, professes to be a Christian and behaves in that way. Now, building on that, but Don, I said we'd get back to you, so let's go back there now. If you are trying to dwell with your wife according to knowledge, and all guys mess it up sometimes, wives usually mess it up sometimes too when it comes to marriage, but treating them in a good way, 1 Peter 3:7, Ephesians 5, loving your wife as Christ loves the church. When you think about insisting that somebody get this permission for the smallest things, the slightest things in life, what kind of life is that going to leave you with? Yeah, I mean, you feel like you're being micromanaged. And everybody has different ways to do this. I'll just give you a personal illustration. When Teresa and I were first married, money was so tight, I mean, we just talked about practically buying a bottle of pop together. But as money got freer over the years, we kind of have come up to a limit. You know, she said I spent $500, I probably wouldn't collapse. But generally, anything above 50, you know, we'll talk about, or 100, we kind of have put, you know, as far as money, a dollar limit there where, you know, we're going to go out and probably talk about that before that kind of purchase is made. Not that I'm asking, you know, her permission or that she's asking permission from me, but it is, you know, let's just go ahead and cover that and make sure that that's something that, you know, we both know that's going on. So I do think, Don, and maybe as people are in a marriage, as the years progress, that kind of thing becomes maybe a little more commonplace. It's more, I guess, in the area of respect for each other than trying to micromanage somebody or something else.
The reason I think many get on it, that even in the Christian world, as well as not as a secular world, men take that from the Bible to say that they are the king of the household. And it's my way or the highway. But every human being wants value. They want to feel value. You can't feel value if you're not equal in the responsibilities of the household. So yes, you talk to each other about this, that, the other. And anything of major, because I don't actually order stuff, and I say, you order some shoes today? Because it came in Amazon? Yes, I did. Okay, I'm saying that. Now, I've spent some money, quite more than the shoes, without telling her. But I'll tell her, because she's going to know about it anyway. So, my point is that women cannot feel equal unless they have equality at home. And in a workplace, they have more than equality sometimes. So, and even in a religious standpoint, they have to feel equality.
Yes, and a good bit of that equality is sharing that information, that communication, and then you do have times where decisions need to be made, and just as elders would hopefully be willing to take some input from people in a congregation, ultimately the decision on how to do some things is going to be in their ballpark, and there are some parallels to that in marriage. Bonnie, and then we'll take Tim's hand.
In addition to the remark that Marcia made, when we started coming here, Gary wasn't attending services with us, and Jeff, I think, was 12, and Keith came up to me and asked me, you know, if he could mentor Jeff, and I was so appreciative of that, and Keith did a good service to Jeff. Greatly appreciated Keith.
And sometimes those things may seem like small things, but they can be very big.
We didn't have elders back then.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Tim.
You know, husbands, men in general, even if they aren't somebody's husband, but especially husbands, they need to be leaders and not pushers, if you know what I mean. I mean, if you say you love your wife, you're not going to browbeat her or lord over her or make her feel inferior. You know, and I think that most husbands that really love their wives, they appreciate their wife's ability to make decisions. Because there's a lot of times when a husband maybe knows he should make a decision, but he can't. He either doesn't have the facts, or even if he does have the facts, he just is afraid to say what's really on his mind, and he wants somebody else to either make the decision or at least bolster his decision.
Yeah.
And he can't do that if he can't, well, he can't do that if she can't feel like she's worthy enough to make that decision in his eyes. And so, I mean, Jesus is our Savior for sure, but he was a leader. He was not a pusher. He never forced somebody to be a Christian. He was a leader. He led people to God, tried to. And that's why a husband has to be in the home. You have to lead the home, but you can't push people into being, you know. We have one of our kids, we've got three kids, one of them is not a Christian. And she has the kind of personality that if you try to push her into it, you're going to push her away from it. That's the facts of it. And we know that. And so we don't shy away from Christianity talk around her, but,
sure,
you know, so we all have to be leaders, but we have to respect the other person that we're trying to lead. We can't, you know, make them think that they're inferior.
Yeah. And that goes back to the one flesh relationship. I mean, it's, you know, you're going to treat your body well, and being tied to that person, you want to treat that part of your life well, because you are joined to that person. And part of that is going to be, you know, trying to get, you know, some feedback as far as making decisions, so that there are going to be some items, as Don mentioned, you know, these are going to be some things that are mutual. Let's circle back a little bit more. I know we kind of got three or four things swirling around here, but thinking about figureheads, we talked about that in the home, where it's possible, and that does happen. But what about the church? Can you have male spiritual leadership, or even leadership within the elders, circumvented somehow because of figureheading? You ever seen a congregation or know of a congregation that's ever been run by women?
Run by women, did you say?
Yeah.
Even others in eldership?
Yeah.
Probably. I don't know if I know.
It happens. It happens. There have been some wives who said, well, when you go to the elders meeting today, decide it this way. Now, it might not have been said quite like that, but that's basically what it boiled down to. And in congregations where you don't have elders, that same kind of thing has happened. You know, the women will talk to the men and say, all right, you know, this is going to come up, or this should come up, bring this up at the business meeting, and you go ahead and push this and push that. That is a problem in some congregations. Now, if it's a larger congregation, you know, maybe an eldership that's well established, probably not so much there. But this does happen, and it's a very unfortunate thing, and it's just as bad as in the home. Don, and then we'll take Bonnie, and then we'll take Carol.
Grant, I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but do elders confide in their wives about a decision to be made in the elders' brain realm to get their incompetence, get their opinion pushed in?
Well, that's a really good question, Don. And it's kind of a multi-part answer. There is no specific passage in the Bible which says talk about, you know, this versus that. If you look at an eldership, I think that this probably would be true for most, that elders, and this is true here, our elders want to be as transparent as they can, you know, with one another. For example, I'm not at the top of my game today, not feeling all that well. I don't think I'm contagious, but just woke up yesterday feeling very rough. And I called our elders and said, hey, look, I'm just not feeling that well. I'm willing to come out and willing to give it my best shot tomorrow. If you don't want me to come out, I mean, I'm just telling you, you know, this is kind of where things stand. So then you can deal with some things that are in different categories where you have pieces of personal information that a decision is made. Sometimes elders, you know, get some information that they need to hold in confidence for a little bit. They may ask the other elders to pray about that for a little bit and say, right now, I don't feel like I'm at liberty to share this information, but hopefully that time will come soon. So a lot of that, Don, is driven by circumstances. You know, somebody might ask you specifically not to mention something to the others. I don't like to get into that position, but that can happen every once in a while. But to share as much as possible, you are, I think if you could talk to 100 different elders, you might get about 99 different answers as far as what elders share with the wives. I've known of men who shared just everything with their wife. I mean, they just, you know, practically, I mean, it was almost word for word. I've known of other elders who didn't share anything with their wives. And then, generally speaking, the rest of them would have been somewhere between those two extremes. And what you share, there are a lot of things there that go into, I think, making those decisions. Sometimes elders will have a conversation where this is something that we just want to keep within the eldership. We do not want the wives to know for whatever reason. But the wives are one flesh of elders as well. And sometimes they can have a perspective or they have some information about a matter that can be very, very helpful. So I guess the answer is it just varies. But those are some of the things that I think typically get looked at.
I asked that question. I should have said, I hope you do, because women have perspective sometimes
yeah.
Men can't have.
Yeah, and that's what I was, you know, right there at the end, I was saying that sometimes they have additional information, they have picked up on something, or they know something, or there's a little piece of information. So it's just like some other things in life. You just try to gauge each situation, you know, pray about it, and do the best that you can. Bonnie and Teresa?
I have a sister-in-law that husband doesn't really like to be the head of the house. And I like her saying it. It's funny. But sometimes it can apply and sometimes it can't. But she says he's the head of the house, but I'm the neck, and I can turn that head any way I want to.
Well, that's interesting.
You know, if I want to, like, if I want to go out and buy a pair of shoes and he doesn't want me to, she's got a way she can turn that head any way she wants to get what she wants. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's a country song about that. I don't remember exactly the lyrics right off, but the girls learn early in life how to charm guys. Maybe somebody remembers. Anyway, Trace?
My comment was God intended elders to have wives so they would have someone to bounce things off of. Because sometimes you just need to be able to do that because it's weighing so heavily on you.
Yeah.
Not that you're going to do exactly what your wife says, because that's just not going to happen.
Well, and that is true. Like I say, there's some...
No, sometimes you do. But sometimes also, we've had meetings where the elders called the wives in.
That is true. That is true, and I would imagine that there are other congregations that have done that as well. It's sort of, you know, we want a female perspective here, and if we've got two elders or three elders or six elders, we'll bring in all of those wives to say, this is something that we want to talk about. So, Carol?
I was just going to get back to the question of, have you ever heard of it being that way? It would depend, the eldership being a figurehead, whether it was because the men did not want to stand up and be the leaders, or did they have a 1, 2, or 50 pushy women just making their life miserable, and they just easier to do what they
say. And both of those things have been true in some places. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Stan, were you raising a hand, or are you adjusting?
I wasn't, but I would make the comment that you have somewhere close to the other into the spectrum there, an eldership that won't ask for feedback from anyone.
Yes.
That they feel like it's their duty to take care of the flock the way that they want. And I think both of those situations can be a problem.
Yeah, and there are a lot of parallels between an eldership and a marriage. You know, Peter in 1 Peter chapter 5 talked about lording it over the flock, which is a lot like what you find in 1 Peter chapter 3 and husbands and wives. Well, if God is not pleased in 1 Peter chapter 3 with husbands treating their wife in a bad way, then I would think that in 1 Peter chapter 5 we have a parallel there that, I mean, not listening to people is not necessarily bad. I mean, you're not necessarily being unkind to people, but it's certainly not a nice thing to do as far as saying, well, you know, we are going to go our way and we're not going to take any input from anybody. That's, in my mind, not a good way to practice the golden rule. So on both counts, you have problems.
Well, if you look at the... where he takes and compares the congregation or the church to a flock, a farmer who takes care of his animals and so on and so forth. The parallel is not perfect. There are places where it doesn't work. But when it comes to a relationship between the one who is taking care of the flock and the flock itself, there, if anyone who is taking care of animals realizes that there has to be a relationship between the two that make the whole work. If not, you've got a tough road to hoe.
You've got to have somebody that's going to be out managing, taking care of some things, leading the group, so to speak. And that's also true in a marriage. When we start looking at Philip's daughters, which, Lord willing, we'll get to next week, you know, we're dealing with a situation which is consistent with what we've been talking about today. That is, the picture is they were involved, I would say heavily involved in the Lord's church, but they did not go off in the kinds of directions. They were not trying to usurp authority. They were not trying to violate 1 Timothy chapter 2. There were ways that they could have spoken and used that gift that did not violate God's will. And that's also true for today. But a lot of people, they will say, well, look, you got these daughters, they're involved with the gift of prophecy, therefore, you know, they must have been preaching at the local congregation or some other crazy stuff. No. No. Tim, back to you.
Well, most congregations, if not all of them, are at least 50% women. A lot of them are over 50%.
Right.
And if an eldership doesn't take that into consideration, and it doesn't mean every matter that comes before them, but there's a lot of matters that they really need to have a woman's perspective on. And if they don't get it, they don't even ask for it. They don't, you know, they're wasting a lot of gray matter there. You know, there's a lot of good ideas that women have, and if they don't get to express them and they don't come to fruition, well, then it's wasted.
Yeah, and there are a lot of things just practically that you want. I mean, imagine an eldership trying to put on a ladies' day. You can do it.
Sure.
That's the voice of experience. I mean, you can make it work. Now, what's going to be the outcome? Well, probably not as nice as if you have some ladies do it. And you think about the Bible classes, especially younger years. You've got, you know, men, you know, they can make that work as far as classes, but a lot of women have taught for years and years, and they have some perspectives, as you were mentioning just a moment ago, that are probably going to be lacking in some of the minds there of some older men. So a lot of those things. Therese, and then Stan, and then we're done.
We have been in congregations where women were not allowed to teach the women's Bible class because it might be a gossip session or
yeah.
attack the church session or whatever. They can't teach because why?
It might turn into a gossip session. Well, if that were true, though, I think I would, if I were really concerned about that, assuming you have elders, put the elder's wife in the class. And then see where it goes. All right, Bonnie, and then Don, maybe we can squeeze you in, and then maybe Stan. All right. Don?
We were...